This time of year is sometimes a challenge, and a variety of challenges, and you're here, and I'm grateful for that. I told you a story this morning. I'm going to tell you another one tonight. This story was told to me through the internet by a writer named Chris Sperry, who apparently is a baseball coach. He wrote an article in Baseball Life about a conference that he went to several years ago. A baseball coaches conference. I guess everybody has conferences. And this was in Nashville, Tennessee. And he arrived on the site, and almost immediately, word started spreading. Oh, did you hear? John Scolionis is going to be there. He's going to be speaking to us. John Scolionis, I think I mispronounced that. John Scolionis is going to be speaking Thursday at 1 o'clock. Ah, great. Who's John Scolionis? Never heard of this guy. Well, it turns out he was at the time, a former coach for Cal Poly Pomona, I believe, which is not necessarily a powerhouse of college baseball. But apparently he's something of a speaker, and everybody was really excited about this. And so Chris said, okay, well, let's see what this is all about. And he shows up at the appointed time, and it's a large room, and it's packed. It's packed to the gills. Everybody wants to hear it. And Coach Scolionis comes out, and he gets into his routine, and it's apparently a little difficult to concentrate on what Coach has to say because he has draped around his neck a home plate, wearing it basically as a gigantic necklace. And he's talking, you know, about baseball and coaching and that kind of thing. And about halfway through, Coach Scolionis says, now, I'm getting the impression that people are kind of checking out there because you think this old crazy coach is up here and doesn't realize he's got home plate hanging around his neck. Well, let me tell you why I'm doing this. He says, are there any Little League coaches out there in the room? And, you know, a few hands go up. And he says, can you Little League coaches tell me how wide home plate is in Little League baseball? And there's a lot of silence out there. It's like, ugh, on the spot here. And somebody finally kind of timidly voices, 17 inches? He says, that's right. 17 inches wide. Now let me ask you Babe Ruth coaches out there. Anybody, Babe Ruth coaches out there? Hands go up. How wide is home plate in Babe Ruth baseball? A little bit less hesitation, a little bit less question in the voice. 17 inches? That's right. 17 inches wide in Babe Ruth baseball. Now we've got high school coaches out there probably. High school coach, raise your hand. There you go. Okay, who could tell me in high school baseball how wide home plate is? Now that people are starting to get into this, several people shout out pretty quickly, 17 inches. That's right, 17 inches. Minor league coaches, any minor league coaches out there, college coaches, how wide is the home plate? We're in college, home plate in minor league. 17 inches, that's right. And how wide do you think the home plate is in Major League Baseball? How wide is home plate? 17 inches. He says, that's right, 17 inches. He says, I'll make this point because of this. You Little League coaches out there, you're going to have next year a pitching prospect. Who's going to struggle with his control? He's going to have trouble getting the ball across the plate. What do you do in a situation like this? Well, in baseball, what you do is you train the child. You teach them. You adjust. You go through drills. You work with them. Maybe, worst case scenario, you get a different pitcher. What you don't do is petition the league officials to get the plate wiped. Home plate is 17 inches. And it's always 17 inches. Works the other way too. You know, you might have a pitcher with just unbelievable control. And you might want to get the plate, you know, narrowed up a little bit. You can't do that. This is the way it is. This is the way the rules are laid down. Everyone's agreed to it. The rules of baseball are inflexible. 17 inches. No more, no less. This may mean that you give your baseball player a little bit extra training. This may mean there's some disputing about how this is actually applied. But in the end, this is what it is. This is what it's always going to be. And if you allow some kind of leeway with your 10-year-old in Little League, before too long, he's going to be a high school baseball player. And then he's going to be a college baseball player. And maybe he's going to somehow get into the pros. And if we breed this idea into our young people, that the rules can be adjusted because the rules are inconvenient, because the rules are challenging, because the rules don't really work for this particular individual or this particular team, that doesn't mean we change the rules. If you don't think the rules are working for you, you adjust yourself. You adjust your team. You don't adjust the rules. This is the problem in our homes. In our homes, rules are laid down. Rules are laid down by parents. And godly parents, of course, base their rules on God's rules. And yet they do the best they can. And sometimes it doesn't seem like it's working out. Sometimes it seems like the rules are too restrictive. They're inconvenient. They're unpopular, whatever it happens to be. What do you do in these situations? Do you change home plate? Or do you change yourself? There may be a different way to apply the rule. There may be a different way to teach the rule. What you do not do is change the rules. And the rules begin with parental authority and with parents who exercise their authority in a proper way. I'm a big believer in Proverbs 22, verse 13. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of the child. The rod of discipline will remove it far from him. Well, not if you don't use the rod of discipline, it won't. Now, you and I may differ somewhat about how exactly the rod of discipline is applied, and maybe that's okay. Maybe that's not such a bad thing. But what we can unify on is this basic idea that children need help. Some parent comes and says, well, you just don't understand my junior here. You know, junior is a special case. He's a special little flower. He's got special needs. I mean, I'm not talking about special needs. I mean, he's got situations in his life that he's working with. He's got a bad background. He's got bad health. He's got bad posture. You know, whatever it happens to be that he's wrestling with. I appreciate that. I'm sympathetic. Does that mean the rules don't apply? Does that mean that God's word is not accurate anymore? Somebody says, well, but it's not Junior's fault. I say, I agree. It's not Junior's fault. It's your fault. It's the parent's fault. It's not the child's fault. Who's blaming the child for this? Foolishness is bound up in the heart of the child. The child didn't have anything to do with that. You came into the world this way, just like you did, just like I did. It's our job as parents to train the child, to put the child in a position where he can succeed. Because left to himself, he will fail. And when Tracy and I went out together a few years ago, met some of you may remember, for a weekend meeting in Texas and left the girls behind. It was over the summer. They were both here. And we weren't too concerned about that because the children were of age. They had a reasonable amount of intelligence and experience and training. We had confidence that all of our stuff wouldn't be on eBay when we came back. That the house wouldn't be on fire. They wouldn't be, you know, holed up, you know, watching pornography all week or anything like that. We didn't do this when they were 12. We didn't do this when they were 14. We didn't do it when they were 16, quite frankly. But at a certain point, when they're trained, you can have confidence that these children can succeed. This works not when you thrust adult responsibilities onto suddenly adult children. This works when you gradually allow children to accept parental responsibilities, drip by drip, bit by bit. I love the language in Ephesians 6, verse 1. Because it sounds like it's written to a five-year-old. Maybe it was. Children, obey your parents in the Lord. Why? Because they'll give you a candy if you do. No, they will, maybe they won't. I don't know. That's not what Paul said, right? Because it's right. It's the right thing to do. It's the whole because I said so argument that children get so aggravated their parents were making. That I got aggravated my parents were making. That's biblical. It is foundational with regard to our relationship. Parents receive their calling from the Lord, and they exercise that calling in a godly fashion. That's that phrase, they're in the Lord. We're not giving a pass to sin here. But it's the responsibility of the children to submit to their parents, because that's simply the right thing to do. And parents do their job, and they try to do it in a responsible way. They try to do it in a loving way. Don't provoke the children to wrath. Paul goes on to say that same time, that's Ephesians 6, verse 4. Bring your children up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. I try to quote that from the New American Standard Bible, but I always revert to King James, because that verse was drilled into my head. Not quite as much as verse 1 when I was a child, but close. Bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Well, what does that mean? Well, I thought it meant you're not supposed to make your child angry. That's what I thought when I was growing up. Provoke my children. I tried to quote that passage at least once to my parents when I was growing up. That didn't go all that well. Came to realize later on that passage not quite as self-serving as I thought it was. That passage is actually saying it is the father's responsibility. I think you can reasonably infer parents in general, but fathers particularly are required to bring their children up, to train them in the way that they should go, so that in the future they will not depart from it. It's necessary for us as parents to give them spiritual tutoring. Now, it may be that this doesn't go very well for you. In fact, I almost guarantee you it's not going to go very well in certain situations. I like to think that we had pretty good kids. And at least part of that's genetic. But part of it is work. Our children are not naturally predisposed to good behavior any more than your children are. Our children are naturally predisposed to be idiots and just generally reckless and all that kind of thing. All children are. Again, it's not the child's fault. Parents need to be training them so that they can make good decisions, responsible decisions, godly decisions. Because ultimately they're going to have to make these decisions on their own. And if they're not trained in the first 18 to 21, 25 years, whatever the magic number is these days, if they're not trained in their youth to make these decisions by their parents, they likely will never get trained. And so therefore it's critical in the home that we respect home plate. This is what God has given us. 17 inches. We don't move God's rules. We apply God's rules. We adjust our way of applying them. We adjust our philosophy, our approach, etc. But we never give up on God's rules. This is the problem in the church. We have churches in our society today that are giving up on home plate, that have quit on the idea that simply doing God's things in God's ways is, by the very nature of things, by the definition of things, the right and the only thing to do. Because it's not working. We're struggling with this. We're trying to do things in God's way, and we keep rolling snake eyes. People are discouraged. People are absent.
People are unmotivated. People are cranky. We're losing our kids. We're losing our seniors. What are we going to do? Well, maybe we should change the rules. Because if we change the rules, maybe people will be more motivated. Let's move home plate. Let's make it 18 inches. Let's make it 19 inches. The fact is, God sets the rules. 17 inches. These rules are inflexible. I realize there's some room for application, again, like we were talking about before. But as far as whether or not we are going to do God's will, whether or not we are going to submit to His judgments, His rules, His authority, there's no flexibility on this. Unless the Lord labors in the unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain who build it, the text says in Psalm 127, verse 1. What kind of a house can we possibly build if we don't build it God's way? Now, if you get handed plans by an architect, this is how you need to build your house. And you look at that and say, well, that's interesting. But, you know, I've got some ideas. And I've got some special, you know, some special training. And my brother-in-law is a contractor. And I'm going to do this, you know, a little bit. I'm going to take a little off here and add a little here, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe that'll work out for you. It wouldn't work out for me. I'm quite confident it would not work out for me. But maybe it would for you. That's not what we're talking about here. We're not talking about human beings adjusting human beings' plans. We're not talking about a finished product that may or may not suit you, that's flexible, that can be this way or that way or whatever. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about building a spiritual edifice to the glory of God. And God has told us, and in some situations told us very specifically, what He wants out of us, what He wants from us, what, you know, how big to make it, how tall to make it, what color it's going to be. All the specifics. Not obviously not all the specifics. But some of them. And whatever specifics God has given us, we need to respect that. Now, it may be that doesn't work for you. It may be that submitting to God's rules gives you, in the short term, results that you don't like. Or gives elders results that they don't like. Our numbers are bad. Our contribution is bad. Whatever it happens to be. Well, what are we going to do about this? Well, there's, again, opportunity for revising our approach, for modifying things, for tweaking things a little bit, within the parameters of God's authority. But what brethren have done over and over again, in my lifetime and before my lifetime, you know this as well as I do, they have decided God's rules don't work anymore. They're too rigid, they're too inflexible, they're too exclusionary. And so we're going to bend the rules. We're going to stretch it out a little bit. It's still home plate after all. If it's 18 and a half inches or 20 inches, what difference does it really make? The problem is, we have decided that we are in charge of how big home plate's going to be. Instead of adjusting to God's rules, we have decided to apply our rules instead. If we have people in the Lord's church who are underperforming, and we do, I don't mean that to be critical of East Hill particularly, every church has these ones, but we have them here. What do? We train them. We build them up. We help them get better. They may not especially care for that training. It may not particularly matter. We want them to succeed, and they want to succeed. That's why we have elders in the Lord's church to help with this process, to train us in the way that we should go. Building one another up, lifting up one another. I love Galatians 6 and verse 1 and many other passages along these same lines. Brethren, if anyone is caught up in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such one in a spirit of gentleness, each one looking to yourself so that you also will not be tempted. I like this verse because it points in both directions. It's talking about the wayward soul, and it's talking about the corrector. Both of you need to get engaged in this, whether you're the one who's being corrected or the one who is doing the correcting. If you're the one who's being corrected, realize that this is a soul or a group of souls who love you, who want you to succeed, who want you to prosper, and they greatly fear enough to get involved in the opposite, a very awkward situation. Generally speaking, correction is ugly for everybody. But they love you enough to put themselves in that position and put you in that position so that you'll get better, so that you'll become stronger in the faith. That's almost certainly going to be in a conversation you don't enjoy having. Well, I'll tell you, as one who gives a lot of these conversations also, it's not a joke from the other end either. But we submit to one another in these situations. Because ultimately, all of us want the same thing. All of us want to serve God. All of us want to go to heaven. All of us want to be pleasing and to grow in the grace and knowledge of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, as Peter says in 2 Peter 3, verse 18. And from the other end, the one who is giving the instruction, the one who is giving the advice, doing it with a spirit of gentleness. This is not an I'm better than you, you need to be more like me because I'm wonderful kind of thing. That's not it at all. Realizing that we have souls in our hand. This is especially relevant when you're talking about older ones counseling younger ones, but not just that. When we go to someone who is hurting, someone who is struggling, someone who obviously is not where they ought to be, nobody wants to be told that they're on the road to hell. Nobody wants that. But some people are on the road to hell. And people who care are going to get involved. And they're going to get involved in a kind and compassionate way, you would like to think at least. Because they know that saying things the wrong way may, in the short term, make problems worse instead of better. But also because they know that they themselves are weak. That they themselves struggle in the faith. And by putting ourselves in a position of pride and arrogance, we can make the problem much, much worse for ourselves. Maybe we'll save their soul and lose ours. That's not really what we're going for here. We want churches that love one another. Brethren who care about one another. And who ultimately, more than anything else, respect the authority that's given to us by God. And by His Son, Jesus Christ. The simplicity of John 14, 15 resonates with me. If you love me, you'll keep my commandments. Well, I love Jesus. Great. I love Jesus too. What are we going to do about that? I'm going to do whatever I feel like doing. Well, maybe you need some training with regard to that. Let's open up our Bible and discuss attitude and priorities and such. Because Jesus says, if you love me, you will keep my commandments. Now, he also says, through John's pen, John, 1 John 5, verse 3, that his commandments are not burdensome. It's not that Jesus is trying to break you down and make you miserable and unhappy simply for the sake of making you unhappy. That's not the point at all. He loves us just as we're trying to love him. And because he loves us, he wants us to move into a better place. He wants us to improve. He wants us to grow. Just like you love your children. It hurts me when I hear parents talking about how wonderful it used to be when their children were babies or when their children were toddlers or whatever. And my child's a tween, or my child's a teenager, or my child's he's ready to go off to college. I really miss the days when he was 2 or 3 years old. I don't miss those days at all. And it's not because of the terrible twos. Well, it's partly because of the terrible twos. But that's not it, really. The whole point of having children is to let them grow up. Now, maybe they don't grow exactly on schedule or exactly the way that you would want them to go, but the whole point of having children is to let them mature. And it's a joy. It is a blessing to see them mature. We want this to happen. I wouldn't ask Taylor to go back 10 years and for all of Teen China. The end product is always better if we're doing things in God's way. And so therefore, we submit to his commandments. We submit to his will. Sometimes it's difficult to do. But 17 inches is 17 inches. Whatever his rules are, we find a way to put that to work in our life. The problem is not with the gospel. The problem is not with the Lord. The problem is with us. We simply need to be better at doing what God has told us to do. Coach Scalinius concluded his discussion with these words. If I'm lucky, you'll remember one thing from this old coach today. It is this. If we fail to hold ourselves to a higher standard, a standard of what we know to be right, if we fail to hold our spouses and our children to the same standards, if we're unwilling or unable to provide a consequence when they do not meet the standard,
If our schools and churches and our government fail to hold themselves accountable to those they serve, there is but one thing to look forward to. And then the coach took this massive home plate and turned it around to the black side and said, dark days ahead. I think there's a lot of wisdom in that. I don't know what Coach Scalinas' religious affiliation is, and it's not relevant to our point here. But when I read this story, that really sunk home to me. He made some other applications also that didn't quite fit in with my framework here. But the idea of respecting the rules and submitting to the rules and not complaining, not trying to change the rules, that is so fundamental to our relationship with Jesus Christ. So basic, so unarguable. Maybe it's time we quit arguing about it. Maybe instead of fussing about how tough it is to do God's will, we need to work a little bit harder at doing God's will. Instead of making excuses for ourselves, excuses for our children, excuses for the elders, excuses for the church, instead work harder. Train ourselves. Help maybe to train somebody else. Because God's plan is not flawed. We are flawed in our application of God's plan. We can and we must do better than this. Or dark days lie ahead. Whether you're talking about the home, you're talking about the church, you're talking about our culture, it is imperative that we apply ourselves diligently, consistently, at great pains, to submit to God's rule. God's trying to take us home, and he's given us a pathway to do it. It will not be done any other way, only in his way. And so we urge you to accept God's rule for your life in whatever way may be necessary, whatever way may be lacking, including and particularly if you haven't been baptized in water for remission of sins. That's God's rule. It's not my rule, not the church's rule, not the elders' rule. That's God's rule. Jesus himself said, he who believes is baptized shall be saved. There's a house full of people who've done exactly that. Maybe it's time for you to do that. Maybe you have not yet accepted Jesus' rule in your life. Maybe you need to do it. If you believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, then put him on in baptism. Show the world. Show yourself. Show your friends, your neighbors, how much Jesus means to you. If in any other way we can help you put God's rule to work in your life, please allow us to encourage you while we stand and sing at this time.